Welcome to another very special episode of Vanilla Weiss and the Nostalgic Nerds. And with us today, we've got a very special guest. He goes by the name of Jason Strickland, who y'all growing up in the 90s, I'm sure will remember as Scott, Alex Mack's biggest crush on the secret world of Alex Mack. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jason.
Definitely, Dan. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm 39, and Nickelodeon, 90s Nickelodeon particularly, was a huge, huge part of my life growing up. And I gotta say, Alex Mack was one of my favorite shows. I've seen every single episode.
That means so much to us, Dan, honestly. And yeah, we've always been a family at The Secret World of Alex Mack that really always reached out to people like you, reached out to what we don't call fans, what we call friends and family. Because we kind of all went through that awkward stage of, you know, junior high school into high school all together. And to us, your family, man, I appreciate you watching those episodes and all that have. We have so much love for you guys as well.
And what's it called? You guys were part of my influence growing up. I knew that I wanted to be a performing artist myself growing up, but I wasn't sure what field exactly I wanted to get into. I ended up becoming a stand-up comedian, but yeah, you guys helped me want to become a thespian in the first place.
Wow. That's so big to hear, you know, and honestly, like, it was people that influenced me to want to do what I want to do. And Dan, that is seriously such a beautiful thing to experience. It kind of humbles me in a way. At the same time, like, man, I know that you're doing stand-up nowadays, and you're getting out there, and that, you know, certain parts of being a thespian has made you confident. It's actually made us confident too, you know, like, we all start from an area that I feel like, you know, we don't quite know ourselves yet. We're just kind of getting out in the world, and how do we put ourselves out there? And, you know, for a lot of us, Larissa Olenek and, you know, Natanya Ross and Daris Love, you know, these are like my family members from that show. You know, we were young kids. We were 13, 14, 15, you know, Jessica Alba was on there with us.
Yep.
My girl.
Yeah, that was the first season. I remember her being on it. And wasn't that the first thing she was ever on?
That's right. That was the first thing Jessica was ever on. And you know what was beautiful about that role for Jessica, and I'm sure she could talk about this more than me, but you know what was so neat is that I had heard that Jessica kind of came from a little bit of some bullying at her own school and then had to be in a character where she was a bully. And I honestly give her so much kudos. She was such a great actress because I don't think she wanted to really play a bully, but she knew that by embodying that role, she was able to put a role out there that we could all start to get a conversation out of. We could all start to get talking about when we were younger, we were bullied, or if anybody was bullied. And, you know, her role in that, you know, even though I think it was...
Oh, one of my buddies is, calling me. I'm just going to merge him in real quick.
Oh, great. Sounds good. More the merrier.
Hey, Matt Frankel just joined us. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Going good. How's it going out there?
Going good. So yeah, we just introduced Jason, and what's it called? We have another special guest joining us today. One of my best buddies from college. He's a music producer out in L.A. Goes by the name of Matt Frankel. How are you doing today, Matt?
Doing good. Big Studs Frankel in the house.
Yeah. So, Matt, You grew up watching 90s Nickelodeon, right? Do you remember Jason's character on The Secret World of Alex Mack? He played Scott, the one who Alex had a crush on.
Yeah, that does sound familiar.
Yeah, hey, how you doing, Matt?
How you doing?
Really good. Yeah, grateful to be with you guys on the podcast and get that chance to, you know, rediscover some of those cool things from the 80s and 90s here.
But yeah, Matt, before you got on, Jason was in the middle of discussing Jessica Alba's role on the first season as the mean girl and how it was such a cool role for her to play because she's such a sweet girl from what I heard, and it gave her the opportunity to venture outside of her usual personality.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was pretty awesome to have Jessica on that first season. We actually did the pilot episode together as well. And she was so sweet, you know, her mom and dad, her just amazing. But she played, you know, kind of the bully, you know, in The Secret World of Alex Mack. And that was so special because to have the writers, Ken Lippman and Tommy Lynch, you know, have them create that was really good for us all. Because I know that coming up in the age of 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, that's when we're all just discovering ourselves. So there are bullies out there. There are insecure people, which is why you get bullied. And, you know, it was just such a cool role that was be able to introduce. And I didn't realize the impact until later. Until a lot of you fans, you know, really that love the show, got that opportunity to tell us things like, you know, I was bullied at school, and by watching Alex, it made me feel like I wasn't alone. And, you know, so those kind of things are really awesome for actors like us.
Yeah, and what's it called? I think the role that I was most able to identify regarding my own personality was Natanya Ross's role as Robin, because growing up I was sort of the outcast who had a very cynical view on life, but at the same time was a really loyal friend to others.
Yeah, and as you talked with her, you know, that's once again just these awesome characters that you could identify with, you know, and get that opportunity to see yourself in those roles. So, man, it's awesome that you are such a big Alex Mack fan, and I absolutely love doing that show. We've all remained, you know, family, like I said, you know, through and through. And yeah, we continue to actually venture together and do things together. So excited to hear more about, yeah, what your questions are and what you want to hear most about. You know, being involved in that show.
Do you guys keep in touch with any of the ones who were adults during the show who played like the villains and stuff?
Yeah. You know, we do. We got a chance. If you guys go on YouTube, you guys could see our 20th year reunion, which was on YouTube. If you looked up Alex Mack reunion. And we got a chance to have like a lot of, you know, the adults that were on the show with us. And we've been able to keep in touch. It's really just like an extension of your family. We were all so close. We filmed the show literally like two blocks from Magic Mountain in, you know, California. So Magic Mountain was like right up the street. We literally could see it from our soundstage. And right next door was Melrose Place. Melrose Place was being filmed right next door to us. So that was like in the Valencia area. And, you know, it was just such an awesome, unique experience filming with that show next to us, Heather Locklear. And we used to play like pranks on their sets, you know. So we were the kids show next door that always like pranked the adult show next to us. And Yeah, so we just all grew up so close, and we do all keep in touch. And we have, you know, I have a new signing event that I'm doing with some of the cast. I typically have been asked, but I haven't been able to, just because nowadays I'm not acting anymore. I'm directing, and I'm producing. So I've been able to be behind the camera and work my way into a love that I actually had when I was on that show. But I was just too young to produce and direct. So I just continued to act. But yeah, so we're all going to get together again soon.
Yeah, I always really liked the performance of the woman who played Danielle Atron. I thought she really perfected that role so well, and she came across as so hateful so perfectly.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. And I believe she passed, right? She passed away, right?
Yeah, I think she did. That's really sad. She wasn't that old, was she?
No, she wasn't. She was a fantastic actress. I had some scenes with her, but, like, you know, Natanya and Larissa and Darius obviously knew her a lot better than I had. But we all, like, stayed very close, you know, to the adults. And we had an amazing experience ourselves on Nickelodeon. I know that lately there's been, you know, other shows that unfortunately they had adults on the shows that weren't really watching over the kids, I guess, as well as they should be. But we were so lucky. We had Tommy Leach, who literally was like our dad on set and watched over everything. We had Todd. He was our first AD. He was like amazing, watching over us all the time. You know, we had writers and producers always around us, and they created some of the best memories in our lives, guys. Like, so much fun. Like, our rap party was at Magic Mountain. Like, yeah. No TV shows get that. You know, we were so lucky, and we were so grateful.
And I think that regarding a lot of the bad stuff coming out of Nickelodeon, that was more so the late 90s and early 2000s decade than it was the early to mid 90s, Nick.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So then that's maybe, yeah. And, you know, we weren't like shooting in Hollywood, like around some of those like Nickelodeon studios and stuff like that. We were in the outskirts. We had our own private area, and it was because we needed to be outside of filming, like in sound studios. We needed Secret World of Alex Mack to like actually be in a city, because we needed, you know, homes. You remember Alex, you know, you remember Scott at a house, Scott Green's house, and you know, Jessica, and you know, we all had our homes. Alex had her home, Ray, you know, Ray had his house up the street, and we also needed schools. So we didn't ever shoot like on sound stages very often. We did have one. Yes. We did have a little sound stage, and we did some interiors in those sound stages. Some of the scenes with the special effects were done like in the sound stages back then, and it was very like new special effects. You know, it was very like, you know, not like the special effects they are now, but it was really cool to shoot some of those. But mainly we were in practical environments. So I think that kept us away also from like, I don't know, kind of like what was going on the sets in Nickelodeon and Hollywood. You know, I don't really like talking about that so much, because we didn't really know those people or know, you know, what they went through. Or, you know, and we were so lucky, we just didn't have those experiences.
Yeah, and what's it called? Like I was saying earlier when I spoke to you, I've always really hated the way though that the writers of Alex Mack really did your character dirty in the way that they departed the character of Scott.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, man. You know, I hear that so much over the years, and you know, you kind of retouched on that. And yeah, you know, I really felt, and a lot of people were cheering, that Alex would have definitely got her crush, would have definitely got Scott. And I agree, they should have. For whatever reason, you know, the writers were kind of maybe under whatever pressure they were under. Sometimes writers are given, because I understand the business so much more now than when I was, you know, a teenager then. They're given, like, you know, certain guidelines and certain things that are performing in numbers, and they felt like for some reason they had to write off Scott. And honestly, Natanya and, you know, even you know, Larissa and Darius definitely too, as a friend, they were all like super bummed when they wrote my character off like that. I mean, I was on the very first pilot episode.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, so, you know, but no hard feelings.
Yeah, and I mean, I could understand though if there got to the point where they wanted to switch up the cast and everything. I know a lot of times characters don't last the whole entire series, but I wish that they would have found a more positive way to depart that character rather than villainizing Scott.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. And who knows? you know, we might maybe venture and rediscover some things. I know that I, particularly now as a filmmaker, I've actually written a rough draft of a film that I think would be really good, you know, for the sequel of Alex Mack. Since right now Hollywood is just so interested in rebooting everything, I might as well have written something. So I may have something in my back pocket that, you know, can kind of help with a lot of that backstory, but no hard feelings at all. You know, I loved the cast. I loved the crew. I loved the actors that became my friends and family. And I absolutely love you, like you fans, like you friends of our, you know, family of our show. Like, man, that to me has just been so amazing. And to hear you go, man, they did him dirty. Like, I wish they could have had you on longer. And there's like so many of you guys that say that. And it makes me feel so good, because I did put a lot of time into building Scott, and I really thought that they were going to really come out on why he would kind of choose kind of a bad girl over like Alex. And I really wish that he could have like came to terms with it. Like, they could have written in that he actually saw how bad they are and then said, no, you guys are terrible for doing this. And then that character and them at least exploring a date or two or some kind of relationship would have been really cool. But it went another direction. And honestly, I was having such a blast in the 90s and on that show. I then got a chance to guest star on so many other shows as Scott after that.
And what's ironic about Scott's relationships on the show, most shows or movies like that, or even in real life, portray the guy or the girls as the one who are into bad guys for some reason, and that role was reversed. It was the complete opposite.
Yeah, you're so right. That's so unique, and that's so unique that you caught that, because, man, that's exactly it. It was such a first, and I believe a last. I don't think that there was ever really a character written like Scott. They could have done a lot more with them, and unfortunately, Ken Littman decided to do something else, and, you know, things just happen. But you're right. That's really interesting to explore that, because normally it is the girls that like the bad boys.
And at the very least, they could have made it that, like, they could have said, oh, Scott's family got a job far away, a good job offer far away, so that he and his family had to move. And that way, at least, it would have ended on a positive note.
I definitely agree. I think that could have made for an amazing episode, Dan. And as you're a writer now and you're writing yourself nowadays, that would have been a much better ending to have, like, a moment where you feel for Scott that has to leave and move. And they could have written him off that way. That would have been so much more impactful. people, and actually gave like a very heartfelt moment. And another moment in life that teenagers have to go through when a friend of theirs has to move. And we've all experienced that in some way or another growing up. That could have been a lot better. I don't know Ken's reasoning. I don't know the reasoning for why he did what he did. But after all these years, like, so grateful to be where I'm at and doing what I'm doing, and no hard feelings to him at all. Hey, you know, I just think your ending would be better.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I do remember very shortly after that, I forget what the company was for. I remember you starred in that ad, shortly after you departed the show. Do you remember that ad you were in?
Yeah. Dan, you know what's so funny is I've never seen it, and I always wanted to. Is the ad, is that one like where we saw all of her boyfriends in a dream?
Oh, no, it was an ad for, like, sort of a company. I want to say it might have been a shoe company or something. But I remember, yeah, seeing you in it, and I'm like, oh shit, that's Scott.
Oh, got it. Yes. Okay, so let's talk about that. Okay, so when I got Secret World of Alex, remember, Ken and Tommy, they loved me from a show that they did before Secret World of Alex Mack, and that was called Kids Incorporated, okay? So I was on the last episode of the last season of Kids Incorporated, and I basically played like a homeless kid that they like take in, they clean him up, and then he's like the good-looking kid, and now the girls like him. Now, that was the last episode of the last season of Kids Incorporated. And then we got Secret World of Alex Mack. I basically didn't even have to audition for Secret World of Alex Mack. They knew me and gave me the part of Scott based on my performance of what I did on Kids Inc. Now, at that time, I was doing lots of ad. I was Procter & Gamble's kid. So I was doing like 7 to 8 national commercials a year for Procter & Gamble. So when Secret World of Alex Mack hired me, I remember, Ken, I remember a lot of the producers coming up to me and going, Jason, we're buying ads that you're on. And I was doing like tons of commercials, Stridex. I was doing all kinds of big commercials. And the commercial you're talking about is a Steve Young Super Bowl commercial that I did for Foot Locker. And that's still out there. You could find these things on the internet. Steve Young Super Bowl commercial. You could put Steve Young Foot Locker commercial, and you'll see me in there with Steve Young. And so, you know, those producers, those guys, that's how they make the money from their shows. They get sponsors. So I was literally, like, in a way, kind of also responsible for the properties of the commercials that were funding Secret World of Alex Mack. Okay, the ads that were in the Secret World of Alex Mack. So you would go from a commercial break, you'd be watching my character Scott, you'd go to a commercial break and see me in commercials on and during the Secret World of Alex Mack. That was another thing that they didn't have in any of their other actors, and that's another reason why they should have just kept me on that show and kept things going, because I had a pulse. I really did it. Really getting out there in a big way. And then, you know, got a chance to go and put Scott on a couple of other shows. I put Scott on One World, if you remember that TV show. That was a guest appearance of Scott Green from the Secret World of Mack in One World. My name was Scott on that show. That was a Peter Engel show. So Peter Engel was like Saved by the Bell. You know, he's one of the biggest, you know, producers of kids television, and he had One World. I was also in Step by Step as Scott. So that's another really cool Easter egg that's out there. I have a few episodes where you could still see Scott in an episode out there.
So Matt, you remember You remember Jason's work, right? You remember his character on Alex Mack and stuff, right?
Yeah, I used to love that show. It was a really well done show, and I'm glad to hear that there's a thought about a reboot, because I would love to revisit all those characters and see where they're at now.
Oh, that's awesome for you to say, Matt. Man, you guys are awesome. Yeah, we absolutely would love to do it as well. And I think the way we'd have to do it is in a film, because, you know, the creators and Nickelodeon, I'm sure, maybe still has a part of it. But we couldn't do it as a TV episodes, but we could do it as a film. So I actually wrote a treatment that you see Larissa, you see, you know, Darius and Natanya, you see their characters, you know, and where they are now. And there's actually a lot of action in it. And I think a lot of people would love it. So, yeah, man, be praying for us. Be keeping your fingers crossed. We're kind of trying to get some things off the floor with that. You know, I think that we all kind of want to kind of do that. You know, I think that we'd be older now and have maybe kids of our own, and maybe Alex Mack's daughter would also have the powers. So yeah, I think it would be really cool to revisit and see where these characters are now. I mean, they're rebooting everything anyways, and the fact that you'll hear from Natanya, she gets really kind of like, not upset, but really like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. They're rebooting everything, but not sequel of Alex Mack. We have just as many friends and family, you know, fans that love that show than some of those other shows. So yeah, fingers crossed. I still think that there's good things to come. I really do. And I'm in a position now where I may just have to have it, me make it happen now. I am producing movies and directing films myself nowadays. And that's kind of where I would love to be in that mix, for sure. So let's hope for something like that, guys.
Yeah, Matt, he's a music producer in LA, but he produces other things too. Like, I know he's invited me to come out there and try to produce a comedy album. And Matt, do you also produce any like TV shows?
I'm trying to get more into producing television shows. I've done some guest spots myself on television shows. You know, I ventured into the back in 2010. I ventured into the world of reality competition and made an appearance on American Idol. I've done, I did a small appearance back on Mike and Molly once, and did a few things like that. But I'm definitely trying to venture into television production. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, dude, we'll have to collaborate, you know. And if you're out here, you know, definitely for music soundtracks and things. I have a studio out in Simi Valley, California, and I have a lot of locations out there that we film different projects. But yeah, we can get into talking about some of those things. But man, great resume, Matt. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Actually, I just gotta hit stop recording real quick because yeah, it only lets me do acronyms of half an hour. So I'm gonna click stop recording real quick and then hit it start again.
Copy that.
All right.
On our social media very soon.
All righty. I'm sorry about that. We're back. So as we took a break, Jason was just telling us about what was it? Is it an upcoming project of yours?
Yeah. So nowadays I'm directing, and producing, not just acting anymore. So we just actually have a great project coming out, our first film. I started our company 18 years ago, and some of our first projects we did were for Baskin Robbins. So I worked for them for 12 years doing a lot of their commercials and web videos and training videos and have class, studied a bunch on just how to create. And we talked about, you know, our colleges that we do, and we're alum on some of them, which is cool. Matadors, I went to Cal State Northridge, where Cheech Marin was our alumni, Cheech and Chong himself, and he used to come in sometimes, which was cool. But nowadays I'm directing and wanting to do my own TV and film, and you know, and so we have The Friendly coming out. Now we could, and you can find some announcements about this on our social media. We're In The Light Productions on Instagram, and we're inthelightproductions.com. So we have a pretty awesome project that is going to actually show PTSD and mental health. It's actually a drama, and it's about a war veteran, basically, that gets honorarily discharged, and there's a dog involved and a love story. We're really proud of it. We have several different distribution companies, which is why it's taking a little bit for it to come out. We're so humbled to say that we have a lot of distribution companies that want it, so we're weeding through who's going to be the best to put this out, and we should make an announcement probably in the next month or two about where people are going to be able to see The Friendly. We hope it'll probably be Veterans Day of this year, because we think it'd be a really good time. But that's kind of some of the stuff we have coming up.
Before actually starring in Nickelodeon, did you used to watch like any 80s Nick? Like, you can't do that on television and shows like that.
Oh, totally, man. I grew up on MTV and Nickelodeon, dude. Like, as kids in the, you know, early or late 80s, early 90s, that's all I used to watch, man. I love You Can't Do That on Television, and, you know, they would use that secret word, that slime word, and all the slime would hit them, you know, and dude, those were so nostalgic for us, you know, and nowadays, we actually do a podcast as well, and it's called 80s and 90s Film Nostalgia. So we just put our first episode out last week with Doug Jones, the creature from the, you know, from Creature, you know, the Doug's done a bunch of stuff. He was in Hellboy. He was in Hocus Pocus. He was Billy. You know, but he's Guillermo del Toro's guy. And in The Shape of Water, he's the creature in that. And we talk a whole lot about 80s and 90s as well on there. That people could come in and tune in and check out as well. And dude, that was some of my favorite television, was like 80s and 90s Nick stuff, you know, and the nostalgia of those shows, you know. My personal favorite was, if I'm saying Nickelodeon, it definitely was, you know, You Can't Do That on Television. I just love that one. Is that one of your favorites too, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was literally like the first show I ever became obsessed with at when I was five. Yeah, five and six. I was absolutely obsessed with that show, to the point where any day that I misbehaved or did something bad, my punishment was that I wasn't allowed to watch the show that day. And that was enough to make me cry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was such a well-written show, and every time you'd hear those, like, those shows from back then, I don't know if it was because we were young or what, but, like, the theme songs would come on, and you would just, like, know it. Like,
yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah, like, I used to watch, like, Elf, and I loved Married with Children, and loved, like, The Wonder Years, like, some of my favorite shows, you know, growing up as well. You know, but like all those shows are so nostalgic, you know, like Family Matters and all those kind of shows. I just loved them.
But yeah, and Different Strokes. Yeah, my buddy who's helped me start the podcast, Danny Cooksey, he's the one who played Sam McKinney on that show.
Yeah, Danny Cooksey. You know, I haven't really, I think, met him, but we've actually been in the same rooms together and some of the same events together. And I love Danny, you know, like him on Different Strokes was so good. And then, of course, Terminator 2 and, you know, just loved his body of work. You know, and Salute Your Shorts, man. Like, I love Salute Your Shorts as well.
Yeah, Salute. Oh man, that was another show I was obsessed with. And but yeah, everybody remembers him from Terminator 2. Everybody remembers him as the one who saved the world by not ratting out John Connor.
Yeah.
There's
That's right.
Yeah, there's so many memes about that and everything.
Yeah, and I think we have a SplatCon coming up. I don't know if you have asked him. Is he going? Because I'd love to get a chance to finally meet him as we're adults. You know, we were like teenage kids running around the movie industry, and I always like saw him in passing, but I never met him. Do you know if he's going to SplatCon this year? But we're all going.
I think he is. Yeah, I gotta reach out and ask him, but I think that he is. I know he's coming down here to South Florida in a month. He's going to be doing a meet and greet event at this arcade place that does a lot of events like that. That they just had Bam Majaro there recently. They had Sean Weiss there recently.
Sweet.
Nice.
I love that. Yeah, yeah, we're actually considering throwing one as well out in Simi Valley, and I think we're going to make an announcement in about a week, and it's called NostalgiaCon, and yeah, we're going to have that here in Simi Valley. We just had the 50th anniversary of Little House on the Prairie out here, and it did really well. Like, there was 10,000 people a day. It was a three-day event. It was so many fans came out, so we're going to throw like an extension and get a lot of our friends and people from the 80s and 90s out at it. And I'm really, really excited for it. We already have some folks that I'll make an announcement soon. Once again, you know, on our Instagram, people can follow us and we can get updated right here on your podcast, man. I really, really appreciated this time with you guys.
Yeah, you too. But yeah, going back to You Can't Do That on Television, that show truly showed what you could get away with in the 80s, because that was like the most un-PC show in the world.
yeah, no, definitely. It's so crazy. It's crazy because when we were younger, we never caught on to that stuff. You know, we never caught on. But the adults obviously had, like, you know, their way of putting in things. I mean, this has been through the course of the time. It's not just Nickelodeon. You know, Disney has done this. If you guys remember, like, The Little Mermaid, the original Mermaid, there's a box cover that has some explicit, like, you know, sex toys that are on the actual box cover. Did you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, this has always been that adults, you know, in the business have always put in kid shows little things that they shouldn't, and they hit them. But I think they hit them in a way that kids and people really never saw them. Just, you know, they became memes or things later. Yeah, so, you know, it's just kind of is what it is. I would never do something like that to this day. But people in the 80s and 90s were very bold as writers, that's for sure.
Yeah, when fans see you, when people pass by you on, like, the street and stuff, does anybody still come up to you? Do they identify you?
Yeah, I do. I still get people that say The Secret World of Alex Mack. I also have people that were Reba McEntire fans. Reba, I did an episode, just one episode of Reba, and I get a lot of Reba people. I get a lot of even just like, God, you look so familiar, your face, I can't quite pinpoint it. I get that a lot. But to this day, I still get people that come up to me a lot. And what's been really cool is it's now been a shift. I got a chance to, you know, do some directing on some projects that some folks now are kind of recognizing that stuff. I'm thankful. I'm thankful to just put out content. You know, I don't make content to actually be famous. I actually would rather people not remember my name. Remember the name that got me here, man. Jesus, you know, I found faith in my life. It kind of turned a lot of things around for me. And I really credit my hard work and my success to that. But at the same time, I'm not weird with it. I just, not like a religious guy or anything. And I just have a relationship. That's it. But at the same time, I still do get some of that. And I absolutely love it. And where I get it the most, Dan, honestly, is Instagram. I love getting my DMs with all of these people from all over the world. And most of it, honestly, 80% of it is Secret World of Alex Mack. And the other 20 is, you know, a lot of other stuff in between that I've done. But that's where I get most of people hitting me up is the social media. And I love it. You know, I'm really grateful for it.
Do you remember what age you were when you first really wanted to be an actor? I assume you were probably a little kid at the time.
I was 9 years old when I asked my mom, you know.
Hello.
And
sorry you cut out a little.
Yeah, let me re-say that. The very first time I wanted to actually be in the movie industry, I was 9 years old, and something just hit me. I used to watch a lot of really great films with my mom, and got a chance to, like, she, you know, let me watch, like, you know, rated R movies at times, like not very many, but, you know, like Lost Boys, you know, and I used to watch like Friday the 13th, you know, like I used to love those, and like Freddy Krueger, like, I don't know, Nightmare on Elm Street. When I was a kid, I used to think that stuff was so funny, and I don't know why, where it came from, but all of a sudden I had asked my mom, like, you know, I want to do this. And she thought, oh, acting. Okay, he wants to do acting. So she just tried her best to kind of try to find people that can help me get in. And so I was able to. I have a very unique story in all of that. I actually went to Florida, and I competed in a modeling competition as a kid because my mom didn't know how to put me in the movie industry. And I was in Florida, okay? And this is how it all started, guys. I was 8 years old. And basically, I entered this modeling competition against all 50 states. And we went out there very broke. My dad and mom were divorced. My mom was just raising my brother and I by herself and didn't have a lot of income. She actually had to borrow money from my grandparents so we can go. Her car broke down 2 weeks before we went to this modeling competition in Florida. And here's what happens, guys. I end up going in and competing, and I ended up winning. And I didn't end up just winning. I ended up winning a grand, the overall points, which was a Chevrolet car. So I won my mom a car at 8 years old. And when I flew back to LAX, there was LA. They had a newspaper reporter that was in LAX that knew about this, and he took my picture. They put me on the cover of LA Times magazine or a newspaper. And then my mom started getting calls because they knew about the story of this kid that represented California, and he won a car for his mom. His mom's car broke down 2 weeks before they even went. Like, the whole story was in the newspaper article that's out there in the world somewhere. And then my mom started getting calls like, hey, you know, we're a modeling agency here in LA. We're a film agency. Like, we want to represent Jason. And my mom was like, do you want to do this? A lot of people are calling. And dude, that's how I got in.
Oh man, that's amazing. But yeah, I think for me at age 7 is when I knew when I grew up that I wanted to do something in showbiz. At first I wanted to be an actor, and then I kind of shifted to wanting to be a director. And then funny enough, I know it's gonna sound hilarious, but I wanted to be a rapper after that. And eventually, I discovered that comedy was what I was best at in terms of fields of art. So I went with it and been doing comedy now 13 years.
Wow. Good job, dude. That's awesome.
Nice.
And Matt, how long have you been in the music industry?
I actually conceptualized my company actually way back when we were all in college. And then I started slowly developing it. We're about to do a relaunch with a new website soon. Look out for MSFP World Music LLC. Probably the biggest area where I was able to advertise what I was able to do, because it's really interesting when you're doing entertainment industry, but you have to do it on a budget. So probably the one of my proudest moments, even though people even on my team might say it was, you know, I wasn't at my best there, was actually the fact that I was able to successfully promote my company while doing an audition for American Idol. And then to be able to transition that into trying to do, even if it was very small pieces, into the guest spots. I even got to parody myself on an episode of Supreme Justice, and it's just, but just to go out there and do the promotion work and actually try to, you know, get things going really from the ground level and heading up. You know, people talk about these overnight sensations, but they don't really know, because they just see these glimpses and moments, that all the hard work that goes into it, and that, you know, the overnight sensation isn't as overnight as people assume it to be.
Yeah, that's true. So Jason, who are some of your favorite musical artists?
Wow. Growing up or now?
I guess a little bit of both.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, let's go back. Let's talk about the late 80s and early 90s, you know? Dude, Dan, I was a huge hip-hop head. So, like, that the fact that you wanted to be a rapper at one point, that's really awesome. I loved hip-hop. You know, I grew up in the era where, like, I remember being, like, probably in the fourth or fifth grade when a friend of mine came and goes, I just stole this for my brother. Oh, my gosh, like, it's got a parental sticker on it. Like, we can't even be caught with this. And it was N.W.A. I remember taking N.W.A. because he's like, I can't ever bring this home. If my brother sees that this is, I have it, he's going to kill me. And so he gave it to me, and I put it in, and I, like, listened it into my room with my mom not around. And, like, dude, it just opened up my ears. I was like, this is so, I loved it. I loved it so much. So I was a big hip-hop head. You know, I loved everything. I have an awesome story where I met Tupac here in L.A.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so
yes.
When we were younger, Yeah, we got invited. I was probably 15 years old, to tell you the truth. And we got invited to David Faustino from Married with Children. He had a hip-hop club every Friday night on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood called Ballistics. And we would all go. And I mean, like, tons of actor kids would go, like, from other shows. Like, Brian Austin Green was always there. He can contest the story. My two buddies that I went with was Sage Stallone, so Sylvester Stallone's son, and I grew up together in L.A., in Hollywood, studying film together, and Brandon Call from Step by Step. And we went to David Faustino's Ballistics Club, and man, you know, I didn't know that it was Tupac at the time. So these guys call us over, and David's there, and they were like, hey, man, yeah, you know, this group of guys came in, and they were buying shots at the bar, and they're like, we did it. And I remember this one dude, like, baby boy, we did it. You know, I'm like, what you guys? They're like, we just cut our album. We just finished it. So flash forward probably like a year and a half later, that same friend, Brandon Call, that was there with me goes, hey, take a look at this. Like, this was Vibe magazine. And that dude that was at the bar with us was Tupac Shakur. And that group was Digital Underground. He had just released, you know, Digital Underground was Humpty, but they allowed Tupac, when he was just Tupac Shakur, to actually get, you know, I Come Around, you know, that song that he did with them. And it was a trip, man. Like, I literally have a story where I remember taking a shot in LA with Tupac and the Digital Underground, Humpty.
But yeah, I grew up a huge hip-hop fan in the 90s, and I absolutely despise what the genre's become ever since the early 2010s.
Yeah. Definitely not hip-hop anymore like we used to know, right?
Yeah. You
know, like, I used to love, like, Second to None, DJ Quick, 203 Posse, all this kind of, you know, all that stuff. I like East Coast stuff too. I like Wu-Tang. I love, you know, Mobb Deep. I loved
him, of course, Biggie, of course, DMX, of course.
Of course. And that was like, I feel like you, like, that was the last of the era of, like, actual good rappers, to tell you the truth. I don't know what this stuff is nowadays either. But I still love that Dre, and because Dre, you know, that was my stuff, you know. I'm a West Coast through and through fan, and, you know, of hip-hop. That's where I was able to discover Second to None, and, you know, these kind of DJ Quick, and, you know, Snoop Dogg, and, you know, of course, NWA, like that story I just told you, when I got that NWA. So I'm just so glad that those guys still tour. I was a huge Cypress Hill fan as well. Just huge Cypress Hill. I saw Cypress Hill probably 8 times. You know, to this day, I just still love listening to Cypress, you know, and obviously, you know, I have a lot of expansion in my music taste, you know, now, but I definitely grew up influential 90s hip hop, rap, hardcore gangster rap, all that stuff. Just loved.
Me too. And this one joke I use on stage quite a bit, if ever there's older people in the crowd, I talk about how judgmental they were towards hip hop. I'm like, you guys kept saying you don't like hip hop because it's degrading to women. And I go, meanwhile, what were some of your hit songs back in the day? Run Around Sue, a guy spending 3 minutes slut shaming his ex-wife. And I'm like, what about Bad to the Bone? That song's practically about a sexual predator. And I'm like, and what about Only the Good Die Young, a guy trying to deflower a strict Catholic chick?
And here we were like, I can't believe you're listening to that music. That music sucks, you know. No, you're right. You're right. there's an undertone of that kind of, you know, talk in everything. And honestly, I like the beats so much, you know, from the hip hop stuff. It just really was like, it wasn't what our parents were listening to. And I think that that's why we rebelled and really wanted to listen to it. But man, you know, nowadays, you know, and I also listen to like Pantera, you know, I also grew up listening to Pantera and Metallica, you know, and, you know, and Ozzy and, you know, all those kind of, you know, I kind of started to really open up and listen to a lot of stuff. You know, and that's what's so cool about music is, you know, it's a mood. It's like movies, man. Like people ask me like, what's your favorite movies? And I'm like, oh my, like you can't ask a filmmaker what's his favorite movie. It's such a loaded question. It's like, you know, there, I have so many number one favorite films, you know, because of the style. You know, I think that if we go back into talking about movies together, I think one of the best trilogies ever made was Back to the Future. It was so well done. I haven't seen a trilogy made that well done, I don't think ever again. I mean, you know, would you guys want to debate that?
I mean, honestly, I believe with Back to the Future, people ask me, what's your favorite movie? And I'm like, okay, I would say the Back to the Future trilogy. Because really, you could sew that up into one, you really could make that one long extended movie. Yeah. And it would hold up.
Yeah, that's how the Saw series was. With the Saw series, it was a story arc, so if you missed one of them, you missed a big part of the story.
Yeah, big time. Big time, dude. And a lot of people, you know, like, I love Saw, man. I love Saw.
Me too. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, me too. And I actually know one of their executive producers. The Saw franchise was so incredible.
It was also really influential, like, during the time when Saw was in its prime, like, you know, there were shows like Smallville, who did one episode that was sort of parodying Saw, and this is a show that's about the development of Superman, but they're taking this time to actually pay homage to Saw.
Yeah. Exactly, man. No, it's so cool that you can have that. Like I said, you know, like a lot of people, you know, see that I, you know, have some faith in my life, and they get really like, I can't believe that you would like those kind of movies. And it's like, you know what? Let's not get weird, you know?
Yeah, it's like, hey, Silence of the Lambs won Best Picture.
One of the best movies. I just love that. I'm in my studio now, and I actually briefly met Jodie Foster. And I happened to, you know, be at an airport where she was coming outside, and there was a group of some fans, I guess, waiting out there trying to get her autograph. And I just asked one of them for a picture. Oh. And I went off to the side, and she came out a different way. And they're all waiting out there, and she came out a different way. And I talked to her for like 15 minutes about directing and Silence of the Lambs, and she said, I noticed you have a picture in your hand. You want me to sign it? And I was like, oh, sure. And so she signed it. And I was like, it was such an accident that it even happened.
I just got to hit stop recording real quick because, okay, we're back. So, yeah, so continue with your story about Jodie Foster.
Yeah, and so it was just kind of incredible to get a chance to meet her. But you were talking about Silence of the Lambs and how it won the Best Picture, and you know, those are just such art pieces.
Yeah, you know? And with the Saw movies, I think that what's it called? They have somewhat of a similar context in the fact that with Saw, it's a psychological mind bender study, or what's it called? Those movies really get you thinking about your own life and get you thinking about what kind of person you are and how you treat yourself. They really make you feel like what's scary about those movies is that they could really happen. If Jigsaw were an actual person, I'm sure we could all find something he would test us for. Did we lose you, Jason?
No, I'm here. No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm like nodding my head.
Yeah, because, what's it called? We're all flawed in one way or another, and some of we've all done at least one thing in the past that Jigsaw could test us for.
I totally agree. That's what was so unique about the writing of that, because it was like, you basically were commended from your sins, or things that you've done that weren't good. And, you were condemned. And that's scary, because we all have fallen short in our lives of maybe not doing the right things at the right time. And we all have that, and that's what was so scary about Saw, because you're just like, oh my gosh, I've done something even worse than that, and this thing could find me and prosecute me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and also just the fact that the traps were really creative. I mean, the kind of traps that he put people in are something that we'd never seen before in any other horror movie, and we still never really see that in any other horror movie, people being slowly tortured in a very unique way that's very well thought out.
Yeah, it definitely went against the grind of the for its time, because at the time, the traditional slasher movies, but to actually have the guy set up these traps where the person is forced to do this to themselves.
Right.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, he's John Kramer's like the one killer in horror movie history who doesn't consider himself a killer. Every single one, he considers himself like almost a psychologist who forces people to appreciate life.
Yeah, that's so unique, right? That's so unique, because it's not like your typical slasher movies that we grew up on. Like I was talking about Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th, and they kind of had more of a campy humor to them. And then, as we kind of got, more sophisticated with our horror films, that's like, man, it just gotten a chance to go to the next level. And then you got like things like John Wick, which is kind of like the boogeyman, right? And it's in that whole like assassin kind of world, And I just love how films evolve, and I love how we evolve as filmmakers and also fans of watching movies. And that to me is what wakes me up every morning. Like, I can't wait to see what ideas I can get and contribute to this world today with films. We're talking about a lot of horror films, and I definitely can't wait to throw my hat in the ring of horror and direct a horror one day. Like I said, I think it's super fun. Yeah, I have faith, and yes, I have a relationship, that I understand in my life, but I'm not going to change, for art. I think that there's so many ways you can tell messages and stories, and I absolutely love like the Saw message and some of those franchises we're talking about.
Yeah, and what's it called? What did you think of the recent Halloween trilogy?
Yeah, so I have a friend that's in one. I can't wait to hear what you guys think. But this very last one that was very disappointing to so many, the one right before it had Anthony Michael Hall in it. And Anthony's a friend, and he's an actor that I like to work with and want to direct in projects. And because of the strike last year, I actually had a project for him. But because of the strike, it got shut down, and now we're trying to get it back on track. But I thought Anthony's performance in that, you know, Halloween Kills, I believe it's called, you know, was so amazing. And these were Jason Blum's, right?
Yeah.
So Jason Blum now has come out, made his own style of horror films that, you know, he comes from the, you know, Paranormal Activity world, and he comes from that, like, kind of, you know, Blair Witch world. And now they're kind of writing in on some of these. I particularly love Halloween, and I just really get very sensitive with Halloween because Danielle is also a friend who was in Halloween 4 and 5, Danielle Harris.
Yeah, she's the one who played the little girl, right?
Yeah, and those, to me, were the best Halloweens ever, okay? Those were the only ones that I really, like, just absolutely loved. I know that Rob Zombie then did his versions, you know, and I liked them, but they still, to me, weren't, like, you know, the best as far as for me. I like those original ones and anything that, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis was involved in. However, let's talk about this very last one. How did you guys like the ending, and what did you guys think of those?
The first one I really liked, and Halloween Kills was by far my favorite of the three. I loved how Michael was at his absolute most badass, and I personally love the fact that, unlike all of the other ones that all had happy endings, it was, I think, the one and only one that didn't have a happy ending, that had an anti-happy ending, which I thought was good for a horror film. And the third one, I thought that it was okay, but I could definitely see why so many people couldn't stand it.
Yep.
See, I was talked out of, like, by several people of seeing the third one, so I yet to see that third one. But when they came back and with this new Halloween series and bringing Jamie Lee Curtis back, who is incredible,
and even bringing back the legacy characters, I love that they brought back Tommy, Lonnie, Lindsay Wallace, and all them.
Yeah. That's what was so cool, was seeing that old school cast, right? Like you were talking about, Dan, like having Secret World of Alex Mack, like you would love to see where they're at now. Like, I thought that one was the best one. I think it was the second of the three that were out, the one that had Anthony Michael Hall in it. And you know, and it had, the third one, you know, that it also showed some of these old school characters and where they are now. That, to me, I loved. I loved that writing. I loved that, like, where some of the very first, you know, episode, you know, very first, you know, movies of, you know, part one and part two, they actually brought back some of those actors out of all these years, 30 years, 40 years ago. That was so cool.
Yeah, the only thing I really didn't like about the third, though, is they seem not to acknowledge the horrendousness of everything that happened in the previous one. They seem to act like it wasn't that big a deal when he literally killed like 50 people, including her own daughter.
Yep, exactly, including her own daughter. You're right. You know, and what happened, I heard, is, like, they changed the director, they changed some writers up, you know, it's like Danny, what's his name?
Danny McBride.
That's it, Danny McBride was, like, one of the writers. Isn't he a comedy writer? Like, that was a trip to me.
Yeah, he is, and he always plays, like, the asshole funny guy, the funny guy who's always so mean.
Yeah.
I think for this new for that new trilogy is interesting because it's a sequel to the very first Halloween movie, but not a sequel to the sequels of that first Halloween movie.
Right.
But yeah, and my only issue with the first of the three in the recent trilogy is that I wish they would have regarded his kills, at least from the second one as well, because making it so that he had only killed five people, to me, didn't make it believable that he would be studied the way he was. Because, yeah, I feel like the body count normally has to be like 10 people in order for somebody to be studied the way they were studying him in that one.
Yes. No, 100%. Yeah, that's just it too, guys. Is there's such a cool like dynamic with horror films and how they're written, because there's almost like code. There's almost like certain rules that have to be in horror films in order for the, you know, like that ghost movie that came out. What was it? Scream. Scream was really cool to like name out some of those like key things that a horror film needs in order for it to be like a horror film. And yeah, when you go against that grain, then it obviously, and sometimes it leads to not something very good or successful in that genre, right?
And what I love about the Scream movies, they were well written, but they were also really fast paced. Like certain horror movies can be a little slow paced with the action and stuff, but Scream got straight to the point.
That's right. It got straight to the point, and you knew what you were watching. And I think that is definitely something as filmmakers we need to really like study and see. Because if you confuse your audience members, it could lead to you not performing or having a very successful, good film. And, you know, if you get people shaking their heads, wait, what's this? Wait, what's that? They check out. And you need to catch them in the first 5 to 10 minutes. And if you don't, then they're done. You know, they're done.
I've really got to give it up to Wes Craven with what the legacy that he left with the Scream movies, that he left a blueprint and like for the franchise to even continue beyond his own life.
Definitely love Wes Craven. Love everything. I got a chance to work with Robert Englund in a movie called Prince and the Surfer. And it's like a nowadays version of The Prince and the Pauper, which is like a kid's, you know, fairy tale. And he played our bad guy, Robert Englund, and I got a chance to talk with him. I just absolutely love him. He can't do any wrong for me as an actor ever because of how Wes Craven and him teamed up to do the, you know, those franchises that he's gotten a chance to be a part of and do. And then we, of course, saw him recently in the Stranger Things episode. And you're right, man. Wes Craven he's definitely a legendary director that had an amazing, amazing career and knew how to tell stories.
But yeah, he was amazing. And what's it called? He really kept at it, even if one of his movies had sort of a ridiculous plot, the way the people under the stairs did, he still found a way to make it work.
And sometimes the ridiculous this works. I mean, we were talking about Nightmare on Elm Street. I love the entire series, and even some of the most ridiculous moments. It's just good fun.
Totally. That's what's so cool about the horror genre. You know, like, there's just nothing better than horror genre. For me, I love horror and action. I like when you combine them. I love, you know, like, you know, what they did with Zombieland. you know, and Tony Gardner, their movie special effects makeup artist, you know, that was like Rick Baker's protege. You know, Rick Baker, of course, like we know him from classic horror films back in the days, you know, The Howling and, you know, American Werewolf in London. You know, this was like Wes, you know, his body of work. But like he had this protege that then did, you know, like Woody Harrelson in there, just like spraying down all these zombie land, you know, bad guys. And like just those genres to me is so fun. Like, you know, it's I you know, don't ever want to be criticized if I, and I hope that I'm getting my point clear, that if I end up wanting to make horror films and do some horror films, like, you have to understand there's such a cool aspect of horror films that, like, for us filmmakers, it's like you got to show up to work and be like, this is the coolest day of my life. I get to explode this person's head, or just, you know, this body gets shredded, or whatever it is. You know, it's like so fun.
Do you ever do any national conventions?
As far as national conventions, as far as like signing?
Yeah.
You know what? I've never done one. I've been invited, and I will say that I've been working. I've been on set as a director or a producer, you know, in the past. So I've never gone. But, guys, I am announcing I'll go to my very first one. It's a SplatCon. We have SplatCon and we have NostalgiaCon coming up. NostalgiaCon is something I'm producing in the Simi Valley area in September in California. But SplatCon, I will actually be sitting down and meeting you guys and signing for the very first time ever with Natanya and with some of our members, you know, some of our cast of Secret World of Alex Mack, and kind of celebrate the folks that are around us, you know. So, no, I've never done one. I can't wait. I've heard they're a lot of fun, and I finally have some time this October to come out and see you guys at SplatCon.
And that's in L.A.?
Yeah, that's in L.A. That's at the LAX Hilton, and I think it's the October 19th and 20th.
But yeah, I'll see if I can get a ticket during that time, because yeah, I've been meaning to make it out to LA to hit up a few open mics and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so good. That'd be a good time to come out, see, because then you could come and see all those casts of all those Nickelodeon shows. They have a lot of folks that are coming out. I mean, Omar Epps, like so many people, Wild and Crazy Kids, you know, they obviously have a lot of the, you know, I think they're trying to get Kenan and Kel, like, you know, from all that. They have a lot of awesome cast already from all that. Even if they don't get Kenan and Kel, like, they already have so many good casts from there. We have our Secret World of Alex Mack cast. There's, you know, tons of animated shows as well, you know, that are coming out. So there's going to be a lot of Nickelodeon there.
And so, yeah, I'll definitely try to make it out there during that time. I want to hit up, like, Laugh Factory and places and venues like that. And, yeah, I'm surprised that they're able to get Kenan out there, because Kenan, he's, like, one of the bigger celebrities out there right now.
Yeah. I mean, and it's crazy, because you think of Kenan's career and basically all of it. He's been doing sketch comedy pretty much all of his life, because he started in all that, and as he aged out of all that, what did he do? He went straight to Saturday Night Live, where he's still at.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what an amazing career. I got a chance to, like, see them all the time and say hello and, like, see you in. Tell all those guys, but Kenan more so, we were kind of, you know, buddies in a way, just, you know, in passing buddies, because we would do, like, the Big Help, we would do Nickelodeon's, like, telethons and shows and stuff like that, so I would see them a lot, and, yeah, man, I loved Kenan, I love those guys, man, they were, And, you know, I know Natanya is very close to Josh, who's on that show. And, you know, it's just, yeah, our Nickelodeon family is so much fun. And I think SplatCon is the first year. It's the first year that they're doing this. But I think it's going to be one of the best. They've got a lot of people signed up, and I think a lot of people are coming out. So I'm very excited about SplatCon. And that's October to see a lot of you guys. So, yeah, man, hopefully we can see you guys both there.
Yeah, so those of you tuning in, you heard it from the man himself. So, yeah, I'm about to head to another appointment. But so before we wrap things up, Jason, do you have any info for your fans as to like where they can find you and how they can support you?
Yeah, thank you, Dan, for asking. So we're at In the Light Productions on Instagram and inthelightproductions.com. Yeah, we have a lot of announcements at that particular. That's my production company that I own, and I just make a lot of announcements there. So come follow us. Follow Dan in this awesome podcast, and follow him on Instagram as well as, you know, his guests. And, man, really cool, Matt, Dan, to come hang with you guys. Dude, thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure was all ours.
Sure.
Yeah, like I said, I'm 39. I grew up with your work, and you were one of my influences to wanting to be a thespian, and it's been such an honor to finally get to interact with you after 30 years of following your work.
Oh man, Dan, that means so much to me. I'm humbled by that, and dude, honestly, we're friends now, man. You got a lifetime buddy, an eternal buddy. You guys have Christ in your lives. We're going to heaven next. We're going to be eternally. I mean, open mic in heaven's got to be amazing, right? so, man, I care for you both so much. I care for all of everyone listening. And, yeah, dude, let's stay in touch. Brother, I appreciate you watching us. And now we want to watch you, man. I want to come watch you jump on stage and do an open mic and champion you, and that's what this life should be all about, man.
Oh, absolutely. I'll have you on plenty more upcoming episodes. And in terms of my comedy, if you go on YouTube and type in Dan Weiss Improv, you'll find clips of me mostly at the Dania Beach or Miami Improv.
Awesome. Well, now I'm a fan of yours, brother.
So, Matt, before we officially wrap up, Matt, is there anywhere we can find your work?
I use my music group's page actually to promote both my music group and my nonprofit. We have a nonprofit that helps with mental health awareness and the enrichments of creatives. So you can find that on Instagram at MSFP_KR3W. Go follow us there. Keep checking on our link tree. We also have a podcast that we do with our various that's hosted by our various board of directors. The podcast has live radio, and so remember, just look up MSFP_KR3W, MSFP crew. I'm also proud to announce that this summer we're going to be, with our relaunch, that we're going to be doing a compilation album. Our group, thanks to my manager, was able to get a song featuring Metro Boomin, so exciting things coming this summer from us. So follow us for more information there at MSFP crew. That's MSFP_KR3W on Instagram.
perfect. So, well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes another very special episode of Vanilla Weiss and the Nostalgic Nerds. Till next time, peace, prosperity, and love, and please tune in, and we shall see y'all next episode. Good night.